I'm Chuck Osborne.
And I'm Michael Smith. Welcome to our podcast, which is presented by Assured Partners Investment Advisors,
where we talk investing and all things related in a way you can understand.
Woohoo!
This is Chuck.
This is Michael. It's Thursday, August 11th, 2025. This is the 21st episode of our podcast. Chuck, what is on your mind?
Well, data, Michael. Data, and the fact that data sometimes lies to people.
Yeah, okay. Context is important, as they say. So,
yes,
this can go a lot of different ways, but why don't you start it off?
Well, of course, just this past week, we had a issue with somebody sent some data on employment that the president didn't like, and she's now lost her job. So, if you don't like the messenger, kill the message. Or excuse me, if you don't like the message, kill the messenger.
Yeah.
Got that wrong. But that led to a lot of questions about what's happening with the data around GDP, employment, all of those kinds of issues, because we've gone from the first quarter of 2025, which was finalized at down 0.5% in terms of our GDP growth. So we actually shrunk by half of a percentage point. And then the very next quarter, we get 3% GDP growth on the initial reading. And we've learned kind of the hard way of how government data works. The first announcement is not a proclamation. It is an estimate. And those estimates do change over time. So for GDP, for example, there's two estimates and then a final reading that is put out every quarter, and even the final reading may be revised, as more data comes in, which it does over time, because a lot of these things are based on surveys and so forth. And the same thing with unemployment. So the unemployment data that we quote every month actually is an estimate, and then it does get revised over time. And sometimes, it can be a year or two later, you get a revision. So,
yeah, and we're seeing, we're seeing some big short-term revisions now. I mean, it's much larger than you normally see in the short term, which, raises some hackles on people and causes a lot of questions and helps our current president sack as it were. But another thing that's happening here is that you've got a little bit of there. You've got a lot of people out there that are saying things like, oh, 3% GDP growth. And, we're off to the races. Tariffs weren't that bad. There's a lot of secondary things kind of going through the marketplace right now with people's views.
Oh, you're right. You're right. And this is where, what is it? The old saying, it's a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. And I think this is especially true for the younger generation, because we have a generation that is come of age during the age of analytics, and this is everywhere. I mean, you can't buy anything or even go to a restaurant now without someone immediately, texting you and asking you to rate the establishment that you just went to. We are inundated with these survey questions and so forth, because everyone is data crazy. Sports has gotten this way, where everything's about the data and analytics. The danger of that is that people don't understand that the data can lie. And it reminds me of the old quote from Milton Friedman, who said that, any theory that cannot be supported by what he called facts, which data, needed to be rejected. But also facts that can't be explained by theory likewise need to be rejected. because, you know, sometimes there might be things that are, you know, seem correlated, but that doesn't mean they're causal, let alone even related to one another. So, there are lots of issues there. And then, you know, the GDP data growing at 3%, well, that's completely because we had almost a shutoff in imports this past quarter. And that follows the quarter before, where everyone was front running the tariffs to get all of their foreign goods in the country before they had to pay these tariffs. And as we talked about then, imports are actually subtracted from the GDP calculation. So when you subtract imports from the GDP calculation, it makes the first quarter look like we were actually shrinking from an economy, which was not the case.
Yeah, we were not really shrinking.
No, we weren't really shrinking. And it makes the second quarter look like we're growing at 3%, which is also not really the case.
Data is going to take time. You know, it's going to take time for these tariffs and what's happening out there to make its way through and for us actually to have any idea what the aggregate numbers really are. I mean, that's just it's going to take some patience to see how this works out.
And we don't have any patience, Michael. I mean, last week there were two articles. This is in the Wall Street Journal. So this, I'm not just talking about some crazy out on, in social media making claims out there. But in the Wall Street Journal, you had two different articles. One was pro-tariff, one was anti, both talking about why the tariffs haven't caused a recession. And of course, the definition of a recession, or the rule is really a rule of thumb. The rule of thumb definition of a recession is two quarters in a row of negative GDP growth. We have had they just happened in April. You know, it's only been 90 days. And then most of them were then kicked down the road because there was such a negative reaction from the market. So the tariffs, to a large degree, it hasn't even happened. And we're wondering why we aren't in a recession yet. Well, I mean, you need at least the two quarters to even have a recession. So so that may be one of the reasons we're not in a recession.
That's also a rule of thumb. I mean, rule of thumbs have been getting people trying to call things in this economy in trouble, truthfully, post COVID, because if you simply followed these quote unquote correlated data points, you would have thought a lot of things that didn't actually come to pass. And if you thought deeply about them, you probably could have come to an idea that, well, this is probably not going to happen anyway. I mean, it's been happening over and over again. I mean, from a yield curve inversion that has to cause a recession to, the point of a rule of thumb is that you use your thumb to look at what roughly is an inch. Right. Depending on how close you need to get that calculation, that may not actually work. A rule of thumb by definition, right, it's not going to always work.
Yeah, it may not work. It might, someone's inch might be longer than your inch. Yeah, but that's a great example, Michael, of, and again, to my point of kind of the younger generation, most of the people I personally interacted with that were arguing back in, say, 22, late 22 and 23, that we were about to go into a recession. Most of the ones I argued with were relatively young in their career, and they're bright, and they know that, they crunch data. And the data, like you said, they had this rule that, every time the yield curve inverts, we go into a recession, and they never stop to think about why. and that's really the problem with the people that become data crazy, is that they don't ever bother to understand the why behind the data. And in the past, you know, the yield curve has inverted for, you know, for various reasons, but oftentimes it is because the Fed is aggressively raising interest rates in order to, to slow inflation, which actually then causes a recession. And, and the people are thinking in the future that economic activity is going to be lower and therefore will take a lower yield on the long term. You know, that's kind of the theory behind the yield curve predicting recessions. But so much of that is also based on everything else that's going on in the economy.
Yeah, you've got to look at the entire thing.
Right. And you've got to look at the entire situation. It's also based on the idea that, you know, the Fed starts raising rates kind of late in the economic cycle. You know, and as we talked about, you know, we certainly had a recession, you know, in 20 with COVID. There were the two quarters in a row of negative GDP growth in 22, and talk about revisions. You know, one of those has actually now been revised to be like zero. Yeah, I mean, barely positive, but a positive nonetheless.
Yeah.
It's clear in 2022, and no one can argue that we had an earnings recession.
Yeah.
With corporate America, you know, and so we're really coming from a very weak point in the economy, and we had inflation, and we had inflation, but inflation was caused by, you know, a lot of missteps on how we handled the COVID virus, you know, not just here domestically, but globally. And, you know, which in hindsight, we now realize, you know, we're wrong. But they, you know, basically it goes to supply and demand on that standpoint. And this is something that economists seem to have forgotten. I don't know if this is true or not. I've heard that they're not even teaching supply and demand and price theory anymore in economics, which is, if that's true, that's really a shame because it's the only thing in economics that actually holds up. We had inflation back then because you had enormous pressures on the supply of goods and services, not the least of which were actually shutdowns. And then at the same time, you had all this stimulus impact on demand. So demand was high, supply was low, your prices are going to go up. That's what happens. And so the Fed had to react to that. This was different than the Fed reacting to an economic boom that has gotten out of hand. Mm-hmm. And is close to ending anyway, which is typically when they are raising interest rates. And so, you know, the idea there is, again, it's not enough to just know the data. You have to know the why behind the data. And you have to know why certain things actually occur. And, you know, I think about this as we used to talk about this years ago when we first started our capital. We talked about the fact that, you know, information or data is available to almost anybody. Even then, you know, the internet, and certainly now with AI, anyone can get any data in the world just by a few keystrokes on their computer. So there's nothing unique about having a lot of data. Knowledge is a different thing than just data. Knowledge means that you have some understanding of what the data is actually telling you. You can understand how to interpret the data. And that's a different step. And it's not quite as prevalent as the data itself, although it's still fairly easy to obtain. The last step is wisdom, which is that combination of knowledge and experience that, you know, that can teach you really how, you know, this works. And, you know, we are missing that in a world that is solely driven by data without any understanding of context or the why of the data.
Well, and sometimes the ideas too, it's funny, and it's a wisdom thing, but they're simple first principles ideas almost always in these things. You know, like we're talking about a specific thing, but let's talk about going into a recession and the worry. You know, what is a recession, right? It's a sustained downturn in economic activity, and it actually has to impact people. And what that means is it's almost always jobs, right? What's the most right. important thing that has to happen? It's almost not a recession if at the end of the day you don't have significant layoffs and people are out of jobs. If people are still working and they are able to continue to pay and buy things, it's not really a recession. And so at the end of the day, if you have these numbers that are floating around and they're impacted by COVID and everyone is still working and has jobs like they did, well, you're not going to have a downturn in the same way you think about it that turns things down. And that's happened over and over again in the last 3 years that you're just not seeing job losses. If you don't see job losses, it's not a recession how we think internally the pain of a recession comes from.
No, you're right. You're right. We aren't seeing that and haven't seen that. And that's part of why that's why we did not go into recession in 23 and in 24. But now all of a sudden we are starting to see, and this is something regardless of the adjustments that the administration didn't like certainly made this worse. But even the original estimates of jobs that came out for the last 2 years, we have not been creating the number of jobs that the United States historically has created or needed to create in order to sustain an unemployment rate. So what do I mean by that? In plain English, you know, every month the job numbers comes out and tells us how many non-farm payroll jobs were created. And for most of my career, the rule of thumb on that is that we needed 200,000 non-farm payroll jobs in order to just maintain a level playing field. Because
as new people hit the job market,
right,
as immigrants and whoever comes in, as all the right. different ways that come in,
yeah,
you needed a net 200,000 jobs to keep the unemployment rate where it was, not getting worse.
Right, exactly. Just, you know, college graduates, people entering the job force for the first time, as you say, you know, legal immigration, immigrants, and also just turnover. I mean, because there's a natural amount of turnover. Mm-hmm. So there are going to be jobs lost. So you need to have new jobs to replace those jobs. Again, this is a rule of thumb, but we've usually said that you need about 200,000 a month in order to do that. In the last 24 months, 18 months, we have failed to get that many jobs created. And that's before all the revisions that brought that number even down lower. So, you know, And we can talk about that as well, but I think there's lots of people talking about that. That a lot of that just has to do with the survey fatigue. As I mentioned earlier, and I know I'm sick and tired of it, I don't want to give feedback every single time I do anything on a given platform. But that's what everyone's trying to get you to do. And because everyone's doing that now, when the government surveys employers, because that's where most of this data we get comes from, is the government reaches out to business owners and says, how many people did you hire this past quarter? Would you please tell us? And a lot of those requests are just being ignored now. I mean, the people aren't responding. We had one of our own clients call me up and say, I've asked, you know, the government asked me all these economic questions and I'm not an economist. I don't think I'm qualified to answer this. And I'm like, they just want to know what you've done at your actual business. You know, this is where the economic data comes from. And if when employers don't respond to those surveys, you get bad results.
There's nuance here, too, though, in that the demographics of this country have changed dramatically, right? So one thing is we're getting older. We're having less children. There are a lot less people hitting the workforce. Immigration, we know right now there's a lot of changes hitting immigration on the illegal side. Obviously, that's doing it. But that's also affecting legal immigrants who feel less safe. And it looks like there's data that some of those people are leaving, whether they should or shouldn't. And so there is a nuance here that 200 maybe is not the number anymore. If it's not 200, the economy is worse off than it was before because it should be 200. But regardless, right. I think it's safe to say that we're creating less jobs than we probably need to. That's clear. But how big? That's a question. But we aren't laying people off yet. And I think that is the... That's where we are in this moment. Layoffs aren't occurring. For it to really be bad, we're going to need that to occur. Definitely not probably creating the number. Who knows what that number is with craziness going on with immigration and whatnot. But it's not a, it doesn't look good here. Now, whether that's actually, you know, recessionary or not, that's going to be a, that'll be a question, but it doesn't look great.
Well, right, Michael. You are right about that in terms of, there are a lot of people out there who think we don't need as many jobs as, we don't have to create as many new jobs as we did in the past because of you've got kind of a trough in the demographics and in the population. The problem with that, though, as from our standpoint as kind of investing in the markets and investing in the United States is that whether that's caused because of demographics or whatever, it's still a slowdown in economic growth.
Yep.
No matter how you cook it, it's going to be a slowdown. And yeah, the official unemployment rate may not move that much because of it, but. If the economy does slow down, then eventually, not right away, but eventually you're going to have corporate earnings slowing down. You're going to have stock prices not going up as much. I mean, it just everything that is tied to it, it's not a good that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
And so it's still something that we should be concerned about, even if we have a demographic situation where that doesn't cause the unemployment rate to go up all that dramatically. You still have a situation where we're just not performing as an economy and as a nation, as those of us that grew up in the 70s and 80s and 90s were accustomed to, and we kind of defined as this is American exceptionalism. And, are we still going to be that? Or are we going to, are we going to become Great Britain?
You would need productivity growth significantly higher to bridge that gap. And there's obviously a narrative out there that it could potentially come from AI, but it's early in the game for that to be large enough to move the needle. Because, you need productivity growth, you need new entrants to the workforce. So those are your kind of two big pieces that could do that. One of them we know is negative. Maybe productivity can be better, but that's a big question here still.
Right. Yeah, and yeah, I'll just add to that we the last technological breakthrough that we had before AI was just the internet boom. And we had a huge increase in productivity then as well, coupled with growth in the population. And it was right kind of at the tail end of that where the millennials started to actually come along as being of working age and entering the job force, workforce, and so forth. And so you had, again, that's what we're accustomed to in the U.S. Is We are accustomed to having technology providing a breakthroughs in productivity and demographics being positive. Obviously if we get, productivity growth from AI, that's going to help quite a bit. Which would be great, but it's still not going to put us back where we're accustomed to being. If our goals are really to, as the slogan says, make America great again.
it's hard to see how you break out of the 2% slow growth we had for the 10 plus years post GFC. If you have good productivity, but negative, significant negative demographics, it feels like you could be back in that sub, that 2% or sub growth level. So we'll see. Right.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think you're right. I think we're going down a long way on just the economy and whether or not we're going into a recession. I think there are other things in terms of data the misuse of data that are impacting things. For example, and this is also in the news recently because Mr. Miron has been appointed by the president to fill the empty seat on the Fed Board of Governors on an interim basis until they appoint a permanent Fed governor. And he is a young economist that has kind of become known because he, wrote a paper that kind of backs up this whole protectionist, weak dollar, high tariff, world that we're trying to go in. And that's another area where, for those that have actually bothered to take the time to actually read that, as an example, just partway through the paper, he's talking about the current accounts deficit, which is the trade deficit, in the common vernacular. And then he just out of nowhere correlates that with the fiscal deficit. Doesn't explain that there, any connection, because there is no connection actually. Yeah. But then the argument becomes that we are in debt as a nation because of the balance of trade. And again, that's something that where you're looking at data just from the wrong direction. I think it misleads a lot of people, where so much talk is given to the trade deficit, the fact that we purchase more from overseas than we sell to overseas. And that gives the impression, because of that language, that it means that we are being frivolous and we are spending more than we're making. But in the reality, and this also gets back to the earlier argument about, are the tariffs going to cause a recession? Imports are approximately 15% of the U.S. economy.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you look at trade that way, 15% of everything we spend is spent on things coming from overseas. 85% of what we spend is things that are, either goods or services that are from right here in the United States. We are not actually spending more on overseas items than we're making or anywhere close to what we actually spend on domestic items.
Yeah.
We just happen to buy more from overseas than the people from overseas buy from us, and again, understanding that context, and understanding that, you know, one data point does not actually prove an argument. You've got to have the context. You've got to understand, and you got to understand also the why of what is actually going on with international trade or with GDP or with the jobs number. Or, I mean, heck, if we want to, you know, really go down the rabbit hole, we can talk about whether or not you should always go for it on fourth down.
Yeah, spend 2 seconds on that one. I love that one. That's always great for me. Like,
So this is the poster child of analytics in sports. They go back and they look at the data and they say that, you know, football teams are a lot more successful on fourth down than they are on first, second, or third down. And they don't ask why. I mean, how in the world did this team that couldn't go 10 yards in three plays all of a sudden turn into a juggernaut that can't be stopped?
What we're saying is the data said, you know, everybody's taking that to mean you should go for it more on fourth downs, right?
The data says you could go for it all the time on fourth down because your teams are so much more successful on fourth down. But there's a reason why historically, before people were paying attention to this data, that they were always successful on fourth down. It's because coaches only did that when they were practically guaranteed, when it was fourth and inches.
Yeah.
And all the center had to do is move the ball and, they had a first down. Then they would go for it on fourth down. Yeah. And then, so they either went for it in that situation or they went for it when they had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And probably half of those scenarios where you got nothing to lose, the other team's already in prevent defense. You know, they're not even really trying to stop you. I mean, they're just trying to keep you from scoring and wanting to run down the clock. And so there's this context of why all of a sudden teams that can't go anywhere for three downs can all of a sudden become unstoppable. So now does that mean that coaches in the past perhaps were too conservative? They probably were.
Maybe.
They probably were. And they probably could have gone for it on fourth down more often than they did. You still don't want to go for fourth down when it's fourth and 10 and you're on your own 2 yard line.
Lane Kiffin, he decided to take that data at college football. He was like, I'm going to go for every fourth down. And, so I'm an Alabama fan for those out there, right? And it was very good for us when he decided to do that.
Those are the kind of things that are going to bite you back. And it always comes because, I mean, heck, we go back early in my career, Michael, we had a thing in the stock market about the Super Bowl. And, if the AFC team won the Super Bowl, it was going to be a down year in the stock market. And if the NFC won the Super Bowl, it was going to be up year in the stock market. And for years, that actually...
It worked for a while.
It worked. And it totally worked. I mean, now there was a reason for that. I mean, the 70s was a really bad decade for the stock market. And it happened to be a really good decade if you are either the Miami Dolphins or the Pittsburgh Steelers, both of whom are in the AFC. The 80s was a great decade for the stock market, and it happened to be a really good decade for teams like what was then the Washington Redskins and the San Francisco 49ers. And, those were the powerhouses during those moments of time. The early 90s, it was the Cowboys. So the NFC just happened to have good teams when the market happened to go up. And obviously that correlation broke down, thanks mostly to a certain team in New England.
Well, we still hear about it all the time, right? It's like when these correlations happen for a long time, then all of a sudden these rules became part of lore and we have to hear about it for the next 30 years.
You're absolutely right, Michael. And again, you know, that's one of those things that, yes, the data, if all you do is just blindly follow data, then you're going to be trying to manage your portfolio based on who wins a football game. But, you know, obviously, if you think about that for 2 seconds, there's no actual connection between a football game and the stock market. And but there's all kinds of things that can be hidden in data that can be misleading to people. And, you know, ultimately, I think this still boils down to what I said before, is that you can't just accept what the data tells you. You have to ask the simple question, why? You know, why is there a connection? And if you can't answer that question, then just like Milton Friedman warned, then you just have to count that data up to being a coincidence, and understand that that's not actually telling you anything. And the fact is, most data is just noise, and very little of it is actually news.
I think that's a great place to end it. So, you know, as always, if you guys have any, you know, please like, please share. If you have anything you'd like to hear, let us know. And we'll be talking to you again in about a month or so.
Yeah, if the data tells us to, Michael.
Says it worth it. All right, bye-bye. Bye.
Chuck Osborne and Michael Smith are investment advisors, representative of Assured Partners Investment Advisors, LLC, a registered investment advisor. All statements and opinions expressed in this program are based upon information considered reliable, although statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information expressed does not consider the specific situation or objectives of any person and is not intended as a recommendation appropriate for any person. Viewers are encouraged to seek advice from a tax or legal professional or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk, and unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed.